Terp Weekly Edition, a news magazine produced by students at the Philip Merrill College of Journalism. I'm your host, Amber Glenn. Today on the program, students make themselves heard in the debate over tuition hikes.
The more funding that we can get translates to the more people we can educate.
And we'll reveal the best spot on campus to jumpstart your career after school.
If you're a graduating senior and you haven't come in to see us yet, visit the University Career Center on the President's Promise.
Plus, free tickets and empty seats. Where are the students during Terp basketball games?
When you have a lot of homework and stuff like that, it's kind of hard to get yourself to go out at night to go to these games.
Also, the kids' card game that's turning into big bucks. And finally, what are you giving up for Lent? That's all coming up next on Terp Weekly Edition. University of Maryland students and members of the Maryland community headed over to the State House in Annapolis on Monday. An annual event organized by the university's SGA, this year's discussion with state senators and delegates fell mainly on tuition increases. Wynn Anderson reports the exchanges firsthand.
The students entered the Maryland House of Delegates on Monday night with a purpose: to fight for an affordable college education at the University of Maryland. Their night began with a greeting from University President Wallace Lowe.
So how many of you have done this before? Oh, wow, I'm talking to veterans here. Anyway, thank you so much for coming.
The Maryland General Assembly is recommending two major cuts out of Governor O'Malley's proposed 2013 fiscal year budget. An $11.6 million cut would come out of need-based financial aid and a $4 million cut from the university system offices. Combined, the cuts could lead to a 5-6% increase in tuition at the University of Maryland. O'Malley, on the other hand, is proposing an increase of only 3%. According to the SGA's Director of Communications, Zach Cohen, it's the best University of Maryland students can hope for.
Our main goal is to advocate for the best options that students face under the current conditions.
Cohen spoke with Delegate William Frank of District 42, who also hopes to keep the tuition increase at 3%, where it's stayed for each of the last 2 years.
Well, I think most parents would say that they don't mind paying 2 or 3% more every year. Like, you kind of expect that after a while. That's kind of like the inflation rate. Right. But a jump of 5 or 6% is pretty drastic, and that's something we want to try to stay away from.
Between other funds for things like K-12 education, Medicare, Medicaid, or the environmental safety of the state, Delegate Frank admits that funding for higher education usually gets cut first. He threw the tough question right back to Cohen.
Can I ask you guys, what should we do? What's the solution here, folks? If you were king, what would you do?
Zach, I was king.
You're a smart guy, Zach. What would you do?
It's not an easy answer. At the State House, University of Maryland President Wallace Lowe sat in front of students and told them it's impossible not to raise tuition.
So the issue is not whether some increase is necessary, but how to keep it as minimal as possible and preserve quality. And that's, I think, what the governor has done by buying down tuition, setting it at 5%, then buying down 2%, and so the students pay only 3%.
Cohen agrees.
When push comes to shove, the job of this university is to educate as many students as possible in an accessible, affordable, and high-quality fashion.
The SGA will find out if their hard work literally paid off when the budget is decided next month. In Annapolis, I'm Wynn Anderson for Terp Weekly Edition.
Now that the countdown to Easter has begun, some students around campus are taking steps to become closer to God by celebrating Lent. Brittany Waters has the story.
Lent is in season, but what is it? And why are students partaking in it? I asked Lisa Green, the campus minister at the Catholic Student Center, to explain why.
So Lent is a time for three things: fasting, almsgiving, and penance, or offering things up. And so it's a time where we remember most specifically the time leading up to Christ's passion and death through Holy Week. So during the 40 days of Lent, which is taken from Scripture, the time when Jesus spent 40 days in the desert, fasting and praying, we follow that example and prepare our hearts to give up different things or make sacrifices through giving more money or through giving up food, through fasting, where we imitate Him and we make space in our lives to be able to grow closer to Him through that sacrifice. You don't just have to give something up during Lent, you can also do something.
Sophomore psychology and theater double major Margaret Brinkley is taking a pledge to do something for Lent, rather than giving something up.
For Lent, I'm trying to get more into like reading the Bible and just learning more about the background of my religion. I don't really believe in giving up something for Lent. I believe in trying to concentrate on making yourself a better person. So that's what I was taught in my family.
Junior criminal justice major Omari Pinkney can remember a time he tried to sacrifice something for Lent, but he came up short.
Yeah, I tried to treat Lent like Ramadan, which is like you don't eat when the sun's up. This is very impossible to do.
This year, he's giving up smoking.
I'm giving up smoking because it's one of my vices that I do a lot. So I give up something. That's something I do a lot to get closer to God. Give up something that you do a lot that you could change, that could better yourself.
Sophomore accounting major Megan O'Donnell is Methodist and is also trying to make a sacrifice during these 40 days.
I've given up all desserts, so anything that contains chocolate, any sort of fruit candies, all of that. Every year, my family and I have given something important up for Lent that makes us realize how important all of God's gifts are to us, because it makes us miss something so much. Like, out of those 40 days, you can't eat it at all, and then when you get it back, you realize how amazing God is for giving you, you know, desserts.
When Easter comes, those participating in Lent hope to feel fulfilled and better prepared to celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ.
I hope that I'm like more in touch with my spirituality and religion by the time Easter comes around.
This has been Brittany Wooders for TERP Weekly Edition.
According to a study by the New York Times, the graduating class of 2011 found the job market to be humbling. Only half of those surveyed were working jobs that required a degree or even remotely made use of their skills. The University of Maryland will host several career and internship fairs during the month of March as a way to fulfill what it considers the president's promise, reminding us that we can't stay in school forever. Here from the University of Maryland's Career Center, we have Associate Director William Jones in studio with us. How are you, William?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. If you could just explain to all of us on campus and those who might be listening, what exactly is the president's promise?
Mm-hmm. The president's promise, so the second half of our long title for our office. But essentially about 10 years ago, then President Moat made a promise to every undergraduate student that they'll have the opportunity to take part in some kind of special experience. And that experience can be an internship, a research experience, leadership on campus, community service, and a slew of others. And the reason why he made that promise is because we were hearing from employers time and time again that if students don't have these out of the classroom experiences, they're seriously hindering themselves as far as being competitive in the job market.
The month of March, I noticed, has a couple internship career fairs being hosted. What do you suggest students do to prepare for these? And while they're there, how do you stand out?
Really, to make you stand out at the actual event, there's a couple of industry or inside tips that we offer students. One is, you know, while you're standing in line waiting to talk to an employer, listen to what the person in front of you is saying to that employer, because you can pick up on topical areas that you know the employer is going to ask you next. You can kind of run through it in your mind how you're going to respond to that question.
So do you have any numbers of Maryland graduates who go on to, you know, graduate first time and are employed? Do we have any statistics?
But if you actually look into the numbers about how many students actually have full-time positions, it's about 45% at the time of graduation. And it's important to note that that is at the time of graduation, and many students will then find careers, you know, a couple of months after graduation. But at the time of graduation, it hovers anywhere between 40 to 47%. And that's above the national average, which tends to be around 30%, 35% coming out of college.
You know, we're almost at the midterm point of the semester. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to the graduating class of 2012 mm-hmm. on just how to, you know, stay positive and just how to really get your feet wet, you know, in this new job economy?
Well, I think the key word that you just used is to stay positive and also to persevere. But I will say to if you're a graduating senior and you haven't come in to see us yet, visit the University Career Center on the President's Promise. You can go right on our website, which is careers.umd.edu, to schedule an appointment with one of our counselors. And you can meet one-on-one with them to develop your own strategy.
Another basketball season is winding down for the men's team at the University of Maryland, and the number one concern is the poor attendance at home games. Christopher Cook has the story on why students aren't showing up at the Comcast Center the way they have in the past.
It's almost March Madness, and it looks like the only shot the men's basketball team will have at going to the dance is a miraculous run through the ACC tournament. But is the lack of success the last two seasons the only thing keeping students from coming out to games?
If I knew that we had a chance of winning anything big, I would have definitely gone.
Junior Joshua Bogtai hasn't attended a single game since he started living at an apartment off campus this year. Most casual fans, like Joshua, only seem interested in the games against the top ACC schools like Duke and North Carolina.
I would only go to the games that I'm really interested in, whether no matter what the sport is.
Attendance at those games isn't what the school is concerned about. Maryland basketball dropped from 7th in the country in attendance 2 years ago to 14th last year. It was the first time since the Comcast Center opened that they were not in the top 10. Junior Harvey Schwartz thinks that not everyone knows about the games that aren't against big rivals.
Maybe just more announcements about it, because maybe some kids don't know about the games versus like the lower teams.
The drop in attendance has been noticeable enough to fuel a couple of tirades from Terp alum and ESPN anchor Scott Van Pelt, who had this to say. I know what happened. They started letting in a lot more smart people that are really driven about their futures. And you guys had to study last night, and good for you. We had class back when I went to school too, and we went to games. It's something that Schwartz admit is a problem now that he was an upperclassman.
I think just freshmen, they think it's like exciting going to games, but like in reality, like when you have a lot of homework and stuff like that, it's kind of hard to get yourself to go out at night to go to these games.
Students need a good reason to put off their schoolwork to go to a Tuesday night game against Miami. The heated rivalry isn't there for those games, and Schwartz thinks there needs to be something extra to get students to come to those games.
Maybe some kind of incentive to get you to go, or like maybe like a free burrito or something after the game.
Other students said that a big issue for them was getting to the games from their off-campus homes or walking across campus from the Commons apartment complex. Discounted parking for students or a shuttle that runs back and forth to the Comcast Center from some of the student apartment buildings off campus are some of the suggestions that students have offered to get them to come to more games. The Terps will wrap up their regular season home against Virginia today at 2 p.m., but many have already begun looking forward to next season. Some may not have warmed up to head coach Mark Turgeon right away after he replaced legendary coach Gary Williams, but his first recruiting class at Maryland has many excited about the future of Maryland basketball. For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Christopher Cook.
Remember the Yu-Gi-Oh card game? It used to be for kids, but Karen Zeitvogel found out that now these little cards are worth big bucks.
United?
Yep.
In the back corner of the Stamp Student Union outside the Baltimore room, half a dozen students are playing a game that you might remember better for this. That was in the early 2000s, and back then, Yu-Gi-Oh! Was just a kid's cartoon and trading card game. Since then, it's grown into big business with big bucks.
This right here, $150 right here.
What's that one?
Tour guide from the Underworld. $150 right here. And you play three of these. $450 in my hand right now.
This children's card game is now for adults because kids, okay, you can convince your dad or your mom or whatever to buy you a starter deck or maybe a few packs, but you can't convince your dad to buy you a $100 card just to have it.
That was David Schechtman, journalism major. He's head of the University of Maryland Duelist Club. That's what Yu-Gi-Oh! Players like to call themselves. Schechtman has been a duelist since he was a kid.
But I didn't seriously get into the game until about 2 years ago.
That might be because you need grown-up neurons to try to understand Yu-Gi-Oh! It's a really complicated game. Duelist Adam Hillmantle and Jason Guy tried to explain it to me.
The main point of the game is to deplete your opponent's life points to zero, and that's usually done through getting your opponent to spend up their resources, which are their cards.
Most directly, it's using the monsters you summon to attack your opponent and do a certain number of points depending on what monster it is, and eventually, through that method, reducing your opponent's life points to zero.
Okay. Well, go summon up a few monsters.
Go ahead.
I still didn't understand, but to be honest, what I really don't get is why people pay hundreds of dollars for a Yu-Gi-Oh card.
I've probably put about $1,000 into this deck.
The reason that people are willing to pay, it's like any other hobby. It's like if you're a football player, you're going to buy the best cleats. If you really take it seriously, you want to get those trademark Nike things. If you really take the Yu-Gi-Oh seriously, you might want to play the most consistent deck, which is probably a Dino-Rabbit right now, which is with the little bunny and the dinosaurs and stuff. And that's probably right now, pound for pound, the most expensive deck.
Summon Rescue Rabbit.
One thing I did learn from my two-hour session with the UMD duelists is that the back corner of Stamp becomes a gold mine when they're training. But don't get any ideas. They keep the bags holding their cards wrapped around their ankles, and they'd summon a monster on you if you tried to take them away.
That should not have been a trap card.
From the Stamp Student Union, I'm Karen Zeitvogel for Terp Weekly Edition.
And that's all for today's program. Next time, we will have an interview with Terp Secret's Sarah Tincher and why baseball attendance is also on the low. These stories and more on next week's Terp Weekly Edition. Thanks for joining us today.